On behalf of Robert Green, a better looking, taller Robert
Green.
Yeah. For Visual Studio Toolbox, I'm here with Uni Ravindranathan.
Oh, fantastic.
Thank you. And we're going to be talking about a little bit about some of the tooling for XAML. So what are some of the exciting things that are coming up?
Right. So today we're going to take a look at some of the tools in the context of building a universal Windows application.
Okay.
Last week, I believe Naveed Saxena was on the show, and he was talking about the basics of how the project system works and how you think about multiple devices and things like that. Mm-hmm. But we're going to go a little bit deep and primarily talk about XAML development in Visual Studio in the context of a Windows app.
Fantastic. And so when we talk about these sort of XAML things, these things sort of bleed over into anything that's XAML related.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the experience I'm going to show today are tailored for universal apps on Windows.
Okay.
But at the same time, all of the features we build, they also are applicable for WPF and things like that as well.
Fantastic. So the first question I have for you is Blend.
Mm-hmm.
Are we doing anything with Blend? Is that something we're focusing on?
Yeah, so let's get started with some of the things in Blend. So before we talk about some of the new things we are doing, and by the way, I'm actually running the latest bits of Blend.
Oh, fantastic.
So folks on the camera watching the show might not be able to experience this right away, but it's coming to you very soon.
Cutting edge stuff, people.
Yeah, and by the way, quality is also going to be somewhat all over the place, so please excuse me if something goes wrong.
That's okay.
That said, let's get started.
All right, let's do it.
So on the screen over here, you have Blend for Visual Studio in 2015.
Okay.
Before I actually talk about some of the newer capabilities, just a quick overview. In Blend, what we have done is we have taken all of the unique capabilities that existed in Blend and sort of redesigned Blend to build on top of some of the Visual Studio experiences.
I see.
That brings to the Blend customer the best of both worlds. You get some of the really powerful XAML editing capabilities in Visual Studio, and we'll talk about that in a second as well,
okay,
along with some of the unique capabilities that Blend has. And we hopefully want to make that combined experience really tailored for UI development in Blend.
So I'm coming more from the Visual Studio side. What is it about Blend that should make me consider moving over to Blend when doing this kind of design work?
The UI design capabilities, and why don't we just get started?
Let's do
take
it.
A look at
Let's
that.
Do it.
All right. So what I'm going to show today is sort of like our next iteration at being able to design an application that looks great across form factors.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is one of the core value propositions that we're bringing to the table with Windows 10.
Sure.
And what can we do in the tools to sort of make your applications pop when it works across a set of form factors?
So when you say form factors, you mean different size devices that are running Windows 10?
Oh, absolutely. Like an app that works, the same app that works on a PC or an Xbox or on a phone, right?
Okay.
So, or even on the PC, as you know, like people love to resize their Windows.
That's right.
Right. So how does your app look great and behave great when the user does something like that? So let's take a look.
Let's do it.
So you're saying, hey, what's new? What's in it for me inside Blend, right? So of course, one of the core capabilities that the XAML platform has always had is states and the ability to edit states, right? So in Blend for Visual Studio 2015, of course, we continue to have great support for editing states. So in this particular example, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a look at taking this application and making it look great on multiple form factors. So let's go ahead and do it. I'm going to do it with a very simple example. So I'm going to go ahead and draw a rectangle.
Okay.
And I'm going to run this application first just to show what it does. Like you'd expect, it would really do nothing. So let's see that in action. But when the application runs, what I'm going to do is resize the window. And you'll see nothing really changes, right? Like just like you'd expect, all it does is, you know, look the exact same rectangle as it does. Now, my goal is to make this rectangle look great as the user is resizing the window. So let's do that. So I'll go back to Blend, and I'll start creating some states. So in this case, I'm going to create a state, and I'm going to call it, let's say, my 720 pixel state. So 720 pixel state.
So what is the best way for a developer to think about states inside of a XAML application?
It's just a set of properties that get applied when a particular condition happens.
Awesome.
And
okay,
in this particular case, we are going to define the condition ourselves as well. Historically, you could have defined a condition as when the mouse goes over a particular element, or you know, when the user is sort of like resizing a window. In this case, we have the notion of adaptive triggers, which is triggers, and it's an extensible concept where you can define a trigger the way you want it. And that's what we're going to see here.
So in essence, we're moving some of the what used to be coding work into what should have been originally the design work of different states of how it's supposed to look. Okay, cool.
So in this case, I've defined a state, which is the 720 pixel state. And I'm going to define yet another state, which is, let's call it the 1080 pixel state. Now note that I'm not really giving it names that sort of like, I'm actually using sort of like an abstract size representation, and I'm not saying this is a phone state or a PC state, because often what happens is the same application looks and behaves, in many ways looks the same when it's running on a phone, as well as when the user is resizing it down all the way on a desktop to look similar to the phone form factor. Now, the flexibility is there, where you can define like custom triggers that trigger themselves on phone versus on a desktop.
Right.
But, you know, the out of the box, we just give you like a way to sort of trigger a state when a particular width kicks in, right? So in this particular case, I'm going to define a couple of snap points, the 720 snap point and the 1080 snap point, and define the look and feel of my user experience at those particular snap points.
That's cool. So it's not just, hey, I'm going to build an app for a phone and then I'm going to make it work on Windows too. It's more of a, what is it going to look like in either state?
Yeah, because and you have the flexibility to make it look great on the phone or the PC. And at the same time, like, just ignore all of that and just think about the size of the window and make the app look great at that particular size of the
window.
That's cool. So that flexibility is always there. In this case, I'm not using that flexibility. So let's go ahead and take a look at the 720 pixel state and just change, let's say, the color of this rectangle for the simplicity of the demo. So I'm going to make it green. But before I build and run this application, I wanted to take a quick look at the XAML and really what happened behind the scenes. So here, what's happening is you'll note that In Windows 10, in the XAML platform, we have done a bunch of work to make it easy to have really concise representations and performant representations of the state. So what you're seeing over here is the setter syntax. And when you, if you remember Visual State Manager from Windows 8.1 or even WPF, like the syntax was really verbose. So you had to really create a storyboard and set some keyframes and things like that. In Windows 10, we have done the work to make it, all you have to do is set a property. That's what the syntax really reads as.
That's awesome.
For a particular property, in this case, the color of the rectangle, you're setting the color to a particular value. Simple as that, right? So we've done the work in Blend for Visual Studio to serialize the markup in the most concise format that serves its purpose.
That way you don't have to sort of remember what XAML you have to type in. The Blend will do it for you.
Correct. So let's also go ahead and, like, just for the sake of the demo, you know, do the 1080p, 1080 pixel state. In this case, I'm going to change it to, let's say, a vibrant pink, right?
Okay.
So what I have is at 720, when my window is 720 pixels wide, I want the color to be like sort of a green.
Mm-hmm.
And when the window is greater than 1080 pixels, I want it to be like sort of a red, right?
Got it.
Now, if I run this application, nothing really will happen because I haven't really defined what the application should do when my particular scenario kicks in, right? And for that, you have to customize the trigger that activates the particular state.
Correct.
So in Windows 10, we have added the notion of adaptive triggers, and you can access that through the States Manager, States Panel in Blend. So let's go ahead and create and define these states. So you see the button over here?
Uh-huh.
If I bring it up, you can actually add one or n number of these triggers. And like I said, it's an extensible concept. So you can define your own triggers that, for example, take the device family into consideration, right? So a phone state versus a PC state. Or they take the orientation into consideration. So like a XAML view that looks horizontal versus portrait. So it's entirely up to you how you define these states. But by default, we give you the window trigger, the width trigger. And in this case, I'm going to add one of these triggers, which is out of the box in the platform. When I add this trigger, I can start customizing its properties. So in this case, I'm going to say, hey, when my window is 1080 pixels wide, oops, if I can type it correctly, do something, right? And then say, just like I did for the 1080 pixel state, I'll do the exact same thing for the 720 pixel state as well. So let's go ahead and do that.
Now, is that red dot on the side telling you there's no triggers for that to happen? Or what is that red
dot?
I'll
explain that in 1 second.
Okay.
Because that's a good question. So what that red dot and the red rectangle indicates is you're doing recording of a property into that particular state. So whenever you make a change,
oh, I see.
You only impact that particular state and not necessarily the other states or even the base representation of the object tree. So if I go back to the base over here, you'll see the red rectangle goes away because any change I make, so for example, let's say I rotate this, it's applicable for the 720 pixel state the 1080 pixel state.
That's so cool.
So that's really what that is. But by the way, one good topic is we have also done a lot of work to allow you to get maximum real estate on the design surface. So for example, if you were actually using, let's say, Blend for Visual Studio 2013, mm-hmm. you would have seen like 4 or 5 levels of toolbar show up. Mm-hmm. Now it's all condensed in a seamless way right above the design surface. So you get a really concise representation of what you're trying to design. And at the same time, you get maximum real estate to do your design work.
That's cool.
So so with that said, let's go ahead and run this application. And what you'll note is when the application runs, and by default, the window sized itself to 720 mm-hmm. pixels, and that's fine. But as I resize, you'll see like when I'm hitting the 1080p boundary,
it changes.
It changes the color, right? And then when I come back to something less than 720 pixels, it goes to the base state. So I've defined sort of like 3 snap points: my base visualization, my visualization when my window is 720 pixels wide, and my visualization when my window is 1080 pixels wide, all without writing a single line of code, all using platform constructs.
That's cool. Now, I come from old school WinForms thing. Usually that would require some coding. Mm-hmm. And what you're saying is now with Blend, and I don't know if how much of this was in there before, but with Blend, this is more of a design issue and not a programming issue.
Absolutely. I mean, making your user experience look great is absolutely, we believe, like is a core design activity.
That's awesome.
As much as it is a development activity.
Of
and
course.
So we want to expose that power in Blend to the user.
That's cool.
So that's sort of like a quick tour of Blend when it comes to creating great user experiences. Now, this is one way of creating user experiences. Like you essentially just want to change a few properties here and there. But the whole spectrum exists, right? You can go all the way from doing nothing and letting the platform do the right thing for you mm-hmm. and by using the right layout constructs built into the platform, and I'll show that in a second,
okay.
to the second stop along the way, which is, hey, I want to just change a few properties, as we saw here, to all the way to, I want to dramatically, drastically change my user experience. I want a completely different view on my Xbox versus my phone or PC.
And it's not even just if it's an Xbox or a phone or PC, it's more of like you could have an adaptive trigger for a particular user.
Yeah. Absolutely, you totally could do that as well. You could because it's fully extensible. You can define like let's say a logged in state,
right?
And then like trigger automatically based on the logged in state, right?
That's
of the
cool.
user. So you can do that as well. But the point I was trying to make is you get the full spectrum, like all the way from betting on the platform to do the right thing for the most cases, to sort of making small tweaks, all the way to completely dramatically changing your user experiences. And we
I
do
see.
All of that using Blend for Visual Studio and Visual Studio itself.
That's awesome.
But I also wanted to show you one more feature before we switch over to Visual Studio. So let me actually go ahead and stop the state recording thing. And let me go ahead and create an instance of what we call a relative panel. So a relative panel is a new construct we have added in Windows 10 mm-hmm. To get you this, like what I said, layout for free. Like it does a lot of things like aligning elements relative to each other and things like that.
I see.
So you can get like a pretty good responsive layout, for the lack of a better term, without actually doing a lot of work.
I see.
And we've done work in Visual Studio and Blend to make it easy for you to sort of like, use relative panel.
So is relative panel more of like, I just want to put something out there that will mostly work everywhere. Should I use relative panel? Is that what it is?
It's sort of like the hybrid version of a grid and a stack panel and a wrap panel.
Oh, I see.
And sort of like taking the best constructs from all of those and exposing some common scenarios that we see happen all the time.
Okay.
So let's take an example of a login screen. You often have buttons that are at the bottom of the login screen, mm-hmm. right? Like you have like an OK and cancel button. If you wanted to do that using grid and stack panel, you absolutely can do it, but it'll take you like a nested stack panel structure with some rows and columns attached
right.
to the grid. It should be easier than that, where you can just anchor the element to the bottom and the right. And that's pretty much it, right? So the relative panel sort of like exposes the most common scenarios in a very effective way
that lets you
accomplish this.
Completely understand.
So just to show this to you as an example, let me go, oops, sorry, my bad. Let's do a little bit of XAML editing because we haven't completely finished the work of enabling the visual design surface.
No. Well,
but we've done a lot of work to let you edit and preview these things effectively. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to create a button. And I'm going to give it a height of 200 pixels and a width of 200 pixels and some content. Let's say foo. And I'm going to give it a name as well. So x colon name equals, let's say, foo button. OK. Now, what I'm going to do is, now when I do that, like you'd expect, the button appears. Oops, wherever that is. And let me just zoom in a little bit so you can see what I'm talking about. So the button appears. And let me just make this panel slightly bigger so you can see what's going on. So here's the button. Ooh, that's too big. So here's the button. And you can see it like position itself inside the panel on the top left corner.
Right.
Now you can set properties on the button itself. So we can say things like relative panel dot align bottom or align bottom with panel equals true, right? So in this particular case, now the button just shifted to the bottom. And if I just move this panel a little bit to the top, you can see it's now aligned to the bottom of the panel, right? That's fantastic. Let's go ahead and add another button to prove our point. So I'm going to go ahead and add a button. Height equals 200, width equals 200. And we don't need a name for this one because I'm going to reference this one. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to sort of set some properties so that it's now relatively aligned with the button that we just created before. Relative panel dot align, let's just say align, let's see if we can find something good, top width. As soon as you do this, we have done the work to sort of pop up IntelliSense and show you all the elements that you can sort of pick relative to that particular button inside the panel, right? So in this case, I'm going to select foo button, and I'm going to close this tag. Now see what happens, and let me just give it a little bit of a margin so you can see that as well. Margin of, let's say, 200, 0, 0, 0. So you can just see both the buttons together. Now see what happens if I go ahead and change the property of the first button automatically to align with the top, right? So I'm going to go ahead and change this with align top with panel. Oops. Top with panel equals true. See how both the buttons went up?
Right.
Because what I just did is I gave an instruction for the first button to align with the top of the panel. Mm-hmm. And that, because the second button was sort of relative to the first button and aligned at the top, it automatically moved up as well.
This is really nice. My win forms is going to show a little bit, but laying stuff out was always problematic. But this seems to really help with that.
Yeah. And we've done a lot of work in Blender and Visual Studio to make it easy for you to sort of like either use the XAML editor or even the visual design surface to set. So for example, all of the properties for all of these panels should show up in your layout category as something that you can potentially go and set and things like that as well. So we've done a lot of work in the tools to sort of expose this capability.
That's cool. So you've shown us a couple of cool things in Blend.
Yep.
In Visual Studio, what kind of tools have we been adding to help with XAML developers?
Yeah, absolutely. So let's go take a look at some of those tools. The first thing is one of the biggest things we have done in Visual Studio, and that's sort of like transparent to users out there, is we have sort of rewritten the entire XAML language service from the ground up to build on top of the .NET compiler platform that people kind of commonly know as ROSLIN.
Right.
So what that allows us to do is make XAML sort of move us towards making XAML sort of a ROSLIN language in many ways.
Oh, that's cool.
Our users use XAML and C# and VB in a very seamless way, and of course C++ in a very seamless way. It's unfair for us to sort of like blur. We want to blur that line as much as possible. So editing XAML is completely tightly integrated into editing C#. Mm-hmm. But the immediate benefit that users will see with this release is they will see like the XAML editor that's snappy, that's fast, that doesn't crash all the time, mm-hmm. and that sort of is like always like responsive. So it's sort of something that we have heard a lot from our users, and in this release we have delivered on that promise of like making it fast and fluid to edit your XAML.
And the speed comes from using ROSLIN as part of the compilation process.
One part of it, and then the other part of it is we have decoupled the XAML language servers from the designer. So even if you did not have the designer at all, so imagine the scenario of you doing visual design for a Windows 10 application running on Windows 7. We just don't have the technology in place to render your designer. That's fine because you get like full XAML editing experience on Windows 7. By the way, that's one of the new capabilities in Visual Studio 2015 as well. We are no longer supporting Windows application development only when you run on Windows 10. You can run on any version of Windows. Of course, the experience is the best when you run on Windows 10.
Of course.
But you also get the point that you get amazing XAML editing experiences when you're running on Windows 7 as well.
Fantastic.
But with that said, let's show some of the newer capabilities. So the coolest feature, in my opinion, is the ability to peek from anywhere, either from your code or from your XAML, vice versa. Mm-hmm. So in this case, I have a class, and this particular class, a XAML view. In this particular case, the XAML view is associated with code behind that's coming from mainpage.xaml.cs. So historically, what I'd have to do is open up mainpage.xaml.cs and make some edits to it, right? But what's the alternate here? So I can just right-click on anywhere in my XAML that has some code associated with it and just hit peak definition. Now, what that allows me to do is bring the code right in situ of my XAML and start making edits without actually leaving the context of my operation, right? So I'm now editing my code, which is in mainpage.xaml.cs, right from within my XAML editor.
That's nice.
Without actually having to switch context.
And here, I mean, it doesn't, like, I'm usually using a couple monitors when I'm doing coding, and I have the code all in one place.
Absolutely.
So it doesn't really do it justice here, but imagine having your own screen with the XAML, and anytime you want to do something in code, it just goes right to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Does that work with, like, MVVM type bindings?
Anything. Like, we have, in Visual Studio 2013, we had added go-to definition for bindings. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, absolutely, you could peak definition now in Visual Studio 2015.
Oh, that's so
versus
nice.
Versus just go to the definition and then go edit there, like, in the code behind.
Because sometimes it's good to have context of, what is this? I left early because I had an emergency last night, and I'm coming back to work. I need to remind myself what's going on. This is really good.
By the way, this feature also helps with visual design activities as well, and you might ask why. So let's go ahead and take a look at that. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to create a button, a simple example. What happened there? Let me just click and draw. Okay.
There we go.
And I'm going to edit its style. I'm going to edit its look and feel, right? So what I'm going to do is, just like you could have done before, and thanks for the large font on screen here, edit a copy. In this case, I'm going to put the style in my application scope as opposed to my local scope. So I can reuse the style across multiple XAML files, right? Very common task to do. But see what exactly happens when I do that. What has happened here is the XAML, as you can see from the screen here, is an app.xaml. But I'm viewing that particular XAML in the context of my main page.xaml. And any edits I make to the view that's popped up here get persisted into app.xaml.
Nice.
So that's something that allows you to, again, in context, see the XAML wherever it's coming from and make edits to it. So let's go ahead and make a simple change. So what's the simplest thing we could do? Let's go and delete a bunch of things. So let's go and delete the content presenter. So when I do that, and by the way, the content presenter was already being referenced, so let's not do that. Let's go and rotate something. You'll see like it is updating the XAML right there, and the design surface is getting updated in real time as well. So it does allow me to sort of make changes to my XAML, no matter where it's coming from, and see it in the context of my visual design task and see it all together.
And not just locally, but even in the app.xaml, doing a style forever, so if all your buttons need to be rotated that way.
Yep, and by the way, I don't know why the squiggles are there, but besides the point.
That's okay, you can see. new bits, it's okay.
But you can see like the edit actually went into app.xaml. You just were able to preview the XAML and the visual design itself.
That's nice.
In the context of the main document.
Wonderful.
So that's sort of some of the unique XAML capabilities. Let me show you one more thing before we sort of switch gears out. So let me close this scenario. Now, one of the things that some people love this feature and some people sort of don't like this feature, and that's the notion of regions. If you're a C# developer, that's pretty commonplace. You want to sort of like combine all of the constructors in one place of the document and sort of hide them away so that you can focus on your real code.
Right.
Now that's common in XAML as well, right? If you have like deeply nested trees, you want to sort of hide away some parts of the complexity mm-hmm. and focus on the region that you really want to work on. So we have added in support for regions in XAML, so let's go ahead and do that. I'm going to add a region. In this case, it shows up in IntelliSense. And I'm going to call this region, let's say, my button, right? And just like in C#, when you add a region, you have to close it out. So in this case, I'm going to type nregion. And what this allows me to now do is collapse away an entire section of XAML away from my markup editor, so I can focus on the particular section of my XAML that actually is relevant to me.
That's interesting.
This is all done using standard XML syntax, so there is nothing magic here, just that we've done work to sort of like create these higher level constructs that let you like hide away certain pieces of complexity from the user.
It looks like XML common. So is there a requirement to nest things properly, i.e. like all the nodes match up, or can you just put them anywhere, the regions?
That's a great question. Like nesting of XML commons, like because each of them is self-contained, mm-hmm. you can nest regions, but you cannot nest like XML commons themselves. So standard XML rules apply, mm-hmm. but you certainly can have like nested, you can have comments within this region as well, right? That's not an issue.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. Now, the only comment I have is usually with regions, it feels like if you have too many of them, maybe you should look at refactoring, but it's good to have this in there to get that
smell.
Yeah,
that's why like people sometimes are like a little nervous about this particular experience because, you know, some people don't like to hide away certain complexities. Mm-hmm. But that said, it's really on your workflow, right? Like if you have like a section of resources or something like that, and you want to sort of like never touch it because it's kind of like a standard, mm-hmm. then you can sort of hide that away and then focus on the resources that you're supposed to edit in the context of your application.
Cool. All right.
Okay.
What else is new?
So the next experience I wanted to show is personally my favorite feature in Visual Studio 2015 all up, mm-hmm. and that's sort of our UI debugging tools for editing your application.
Oh, that's going to
be
big.
So let's go ahead and run this application. I hope it works because there were some squiggles. So let's keep our fingers crossed.
Of course it'll work.
All right. So when it starts the debugging session, you will notice a couple of new panels being introduced in Visual Studio. Over here, docked on the left, is the live visual tree. And you can, of course, pin it forever. Let me just get this window out of the way for a second. And over on the right-hand side is the live property explorer. So let me go ahead and pin that as well. So what these panels are think about them as watch windows in Visual Studio's uh-huh. debugging experience that everyone loves, but tailored towards visualizing your XAML trees, right?
Okay.
So in this case, I have a XAML visual tree that contains a button. I can just go ahead and select anything in my XAML visual tree. So I can, just like you would expect, have a selection tool, switch back to the application, and as you move your mouse over, you can see what's going to get selected if you click. So in this case, I want to select this particular string. In this case, the button's content. And you can see like the tree is now updated in real time. I can see all of the properties that are coming from anywhere in your, all of the tree elements that are coming from anywhere in your running application. And you can see some properties for that as well.
That's nice. That's almost like your HTML right-click inspect element
Absolutely.
Kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Except even more integrated.
Yep. So what you can now do is start making changes, right? So for example, let's say you wanted to, you know, visualize how the button looks like with a very long string, right? So you can go and make a change quickly, press it out, hit enter, and then it'll update the running application in real time. So this feature is actually super useful for people who want to inspect not only visual inconsistencies and issues, like for example, the data binding doesn't really work, mm-hmm. but they can also do things like test their application for certain extreme cases that are hard to reproduce without changing their code, right? So let's say you're getting some data from a data service, like a database, mm-hmm. and you want to test your user experience with a really long string
right.
or a really short string. Now you can of course change the data models and, you know, test your application, but this is also yet another effective way where you can temporarily change something, see how your application looks great or not, mm-hmm. and then go and inspect and fix those issues.
If you're having hierarchical issues, is there a way to move nodes around?
Not in the first iteration. Mm-hmm. You can't really reparent visual tree nodes, mm-hmm. But you certainly can like change any property anywhere.
That's cool.
Right? So that's not really...
Is it changing it just at the runtime, or is it actually changing it in the code?
That's where we want to get to. where we want to sort of like think of this as sort of like XAML edit and continue.
Right.
Where we want to sort of like allow you to just freeform change your XAML and get your application to update. But in this first iteration, we have actually done some work here. So if I go back to my live visual tree, you can see there are a couple of nodes that mm-hmm. show up here that allow me to sort of see when my markup contains those elements. Right, so in this case, the grid as well as the button are a part of my markup. But my button's elements within the button are coming from the system theme. Right, so I can just go on any element, and we have implemented full source synchronization. So I can just hit view source, and we will take you to the line of XAML, no matter where it's coming from. It may be coming from some resource dictionary, no problem. We'll take you to the exact line of markup, and you can sort of like, you know, immediately start changing it in the context of that. So we have implemented sort of go-to-source capabilities. We do want to take it to the next level. We can just allow you to sort of persist the edit
as well. This is really nice, especially someone that's starting up with XAML, just to get a feel for what is actually happening with the visual source tree, et cetera.
Yeah, it's super, super useful to sort of investigate, like, you know, data binding issues and things like that as well.
Fantastic. All right, what else you got?
Okay, so let's switch gears to doing some profiling.
Okay.
So what I'm going to do is bring up the Diagnostics Hub, which shows you all of the profiling tools that are available to you. Now, like you'd expect, you have the standard set of tools, the CPU usage, the memory usage tool that we added in Visual Studio 2015. But one of the new tools we have added, built from the ground up again, is the Application Timeline tool. So think of this as the UI responsiveness tool that was there in Visual Studio 2015, but completely reimagined. We took a lot of the cool stuff that was there in the IE F12 tools and sort of brought that over to the XAML developer and hopefully made it better. So let's go take a look at that. I'm going to go ahead and run this application. And by the way, these tools work on all devices. So if your application is running on a physical phone or an Xbox, that's fine. You can still profile your application and get information out of them. So this application doesn't really do much. But for the sake of the demo, I'm just going to stop collecting and just walk you through some of the things we have in there. So just like we'd expect, there's a high-level graphical overview of the kinds of events that are happening in this application. Now, this is a blank application, so you know, you're not going to be able to optimize this a lot. But you can kind of see, like, you know, where your application code is running versus where parsing and layout and things like that are happening. But one of the best things about this tool is you can now take a look at these what we call meta-level events. So think about application startup as a scenario that the user is trying to optimize, right? Mm-hmm. The user experience stops when the user cares about when the application comes up for the first time.
Right.
So as a developer, that's the one that you want to make really awesome, right? You want the application to start up quickly. Similarly, when the user is navigating from a page to the other, right? You want to make that experience snappy and, you know.
And
like
usually
that.
That's where we optimize the least. As a developer, we're opening up the database connection, we're pulling stuff down. But what we can do is when we look at this, we'll be able to see, oh man, that HTTP GET for that resource that I'm pulling down from the system, I could probably do that later.
Yep, and then you can just like filter to that particular scenario that you care about. So in this case, I don't care about all this other complexity that I've collected. I just wanted to optimize my application startup. So you can just like filter to that and see the sub-events that are happening within
really
that particular range. So in this case, of course, it's a very simple application, so you're not going to be able to do much. But you can see all the different kinds of events, like what pages are getting loaded, what pages are getting parsed, and then you can sort of get an idea of like where the time is actually getting spent.
And here you might see, for example, downloading whatever X from
That's
Y,
correct.
And you're thinking, well, I don't need to put that there.
Correct. And generally, like these tools are what we call cooperative, so you can run multiple of these tools together. So you'd probably get the best bang for the buck if you run the UI response or the application timeline tool in conjunction with the CPU utilization tool.
I see.
So you can sort of like figure out what's happening in a particular time range and then look at where the CPU is actually, you know, getting spent. Like what is the program actually doing when that particular event is, you know, is happening. In
That's really nice.
So you can sort of cooperatively use these tools to get actionable data for your application.
Wow, it seems like there's a lot coming out for XAML developers in 2015. We talked about Blend. We talked about sort of the form factor design stuff that we can do with adaptive triggers, et cetera, and how you can do it in Blend. We talked about in Visual Studio how we have these really cool XAML features. We also talked about UI debugging and performance tools. It seems like we have a really nice set of things for XAML developers. Anything else you want to tell us about?
This was like a really quick 20-minute overview of the kinds of tools we have. Mm-hmm. But the point is, like, XAML development is actually core to the success of Windows, and we want to make it the best possible experience in Visual Studio for the XAML developer to be, you know, really successful building great apps. So we're looking forward for people to download these tools, and especially some of the new things that I showed today. Give us some feedback. We'd love to hear where we can do better. But at the same time, like, we really hope you enjoy using these tools.
Well, thanks so much for spending some time with us, and thanks for watching Visual Studio Toolbox. You'll see Robert next time. We'll catch you next time. Take care.
Thank you.